I can't remember a time in my life where someone hasn't hated me. From a young child, I was labelled too loud, too wild, too much. Somehow, despite it all, it has never fazed me. Don't get me wrong, of course at times my ego has a pity party, but it's always been short-lived and the judgment of others has only fueled me to be even louder. I've survived childhood abuse, eating disorders, heartache, homelessness, substance abuse, and everything in between. Join me as I dive into it all and hopefully my rambles can encourage you to be your most outspoken self. Let's get controversial together. Hey guys, and welcome to episode 4 of Outspoken with the Controversial Queen. I've gone to record this several times. I keep fucking up, so excuse me if I sound puffed already. I've read out like 7-page novels and then realized I had to start again. So that's been fun. On this episode, I wanted to talk about autism. Now, I will go into autism more as episodes go on. I'd definitely love to gather and collect a list of questions that people would like to know if I don't cover it in this. I'm often asked about, you know, autism and tips and solutions and all these things. And eventually I would also like to have some guest speakers that might be able to offer some tips and solutions to parents as well. But I thought to kick this part of talking on autism off, I would touch on the blog post that I did that ended up causing controversy, that blew up in the media, where I had touched on hating autism. I had many, many carers reach out and thank me for speaking on such a taboo subject. And I also copped a lot of shit and a lot of hate from, you know, people on the spectrum that felt attacked. And, you know, I'm often asked, you know, after all that, would you go back and change it? And no, if anything, it's made me stand firm in those thoughts and feelings, because as a carer, you should be able to express yourself and feel exhausted. You know, I'm not saying I have it harder than anybody else, but we're allowed to feel exhausted at these situations. So this episode, I'm hoping it's working the way that I'm thinking. Again, you're all coming on this podcast journey with me. I'm still learning. I'm still figuring out all the best ways to do it. But I had a thought before I sat down to record, and, you know, my children, I hate these labels, are considered high functioning. And I know an incredible father who has a child that's on the other end of the spectrum and is considered low functioning. And I thought, while I'm touching on this and having these conversations, it might be nice to hear from somebody living on the other side of it, on the other end of the spectrum. So I reached out to him, and I'm going to record with him a little bit later, and I'll piece it somewhere in this podcast, probably in the middle. I'll probably take a break after I read out my blog, add it, and then touch on some other stuff to finish it off with. But anyway, we'll see if it sounds thrown together. Like, I apologize again. I'm figuring it all out, getting a flow. I hadn't earlier planned to, maybe I would have started the interview off first, but it's just the way it's worked out today. But I really want to include a conversation with Michael. So yeah, buckle in, and apologize if it's all over the place. But we'll dive in. We'll go back to the first blog that I did back in 2019. This did hit the media, and it started earning me that controversial queen title. So let's get into it. I have posted some pretty controversial posts on this page, but I have to admit this topic is the one that has actually made me sick. I've gone to write this many times and delete as soon as I begin typing. It's thoughts and feelings that are heavy on my shoulders every day, and I feel pulled to share my reality. I always try to be as raw and real here as I can, not just for myself to have an outlet, but to reach others that need to see they aren't alone. So I'm going with my gut. I would like to make it clear that my heartache is not intended to offend, but to share. I don't seek debate, just maybe some understanding. The thing is, I love my children more than anything in this world, but I hate autism. I hate it with every inch of my being. I know as autism parents, we are supposed to love it, supposed to embrace it, supposed to celebrate it, but today I am battered. I am bruised, I am traumatized, and I am so sick of it feeling, so sick of feeling completely alone, because if you're not making it all out as quirky habits and fucking rainbows, then you're a shit parent. I know I'm so lucky that my children are classed as high functioning in the world of autism. I know it could be much worse, and I don't for a second pretend that I have it worse off than anyone else, but I would never wish this journey on anyone. I am so angry at this label, this one simple word that instantly means that I am supposed to be shouting with pride from the rooftops, this one label that suggests that it's okay for me to be beat on, to be screamed at, clawed at, abused, wished death upon, hated. I live at the mercy of completely unpredictable, uncontrollable mood swings from a child who is growing stronger, smarter, and crueler with each meltdown. I see adults living with autism tearing carers to shreds on lying, saying they have no right to complain, no right to be upset, and I sympathise that they feel attacked, but why are we not calling a spade? Why is this world turning so politically correct that a disability is only allowed to affect the person living with it? The carer doesn't matter. They simply exist to cater to another person's every whim, and a copper beating, in my case, is parental responsibility. We have this growing epidemic with more and more children diagnosed with autism every single day. Instead of looking for ways to curb this or change this, we are simply pushing to embrace, accept, and adapt. Simultaneously, the government slowly strips away all services and access to interventions that could possibly help parents struggling. Parents who cannot work due to being full-time carers for their high-needs children and are told that somehow coming up with money to fund therapies and support is parental responsibility. Parents are forced to beg to help their child. We fight, we beg, we plead, and then we are turned away. Carers push to absolute extremes in order to prove they need support. A task that the NDIS seems to want to make so tediously impossible that many end up with no help at all. A high-functioning person with autism may be able to communicate with peers, they may be able to read and write, but it often means that socially they struggle, emotionally they struggle, at school they struggle with concentration, they struggle with consequences, they struggle. With their frustration overwhelms them, they lash out. It is hard. If a carer had a partner that emotionally abused them regularly and physically attacked them frequently, everyone in their life would encourage them to leave. But you don't have that option as a parent. Love and support them through it all, but years and years of abuse is exhausting. Eventually your spirit breaks. I don't think that it's the physical attacks that hurt me the most anymore. It's the words. It's knowing that I give every inch of myself, devoting my nights to researching everything I can that may help, to sacrificing my own needs to put my children first, to fighting a broken government to access support, to travelling back and forth to therapy, to getting up every morning and trying again, all the while being told I'm worthless and never doing enough. Sorry, I didn't think this would actually make me cry reading it out. When I wrote this, it was the hardest part of autism was in Hendrix. And the last few weeks, it's been really hard with Morrison. Anyway, let's finish this off. The glamorization of autism makes me feel so inadequate. The stigma around carers who struggle or parents who fear it makes me feel like a complete failure. I'm loving, I'm accepting, and I'm busting my goddamn ass off. Now what? I'm so afraid of when the next outburst will be. So terrified that I won't be able to control my child's next outburst and that I'll end up in hospital. Or worse, my mind spins 100 miles an hour. Autism isn't a colourful piece that needs celebrating. Autism can be absolute hell, and it scares me at how normal it's painted to be now. How many carers need to completely break down before people realise this again? Should every disability be accepted? Absolutely. But should we also stop pretending autism is no big deal? Abso-fucking-lutely. To the mums and dads that happen to feel this way too, you aren't alone. You are doing more work than most will ever know, and you are doing the best job you can, in at times the worst and darkest times of your life. From an autism mum barely hanging on that finds it completely insulting that my child's brutal struggles and my brutal struggles to give him the best life can be narrowed down to a cute little puzzle piece that just needs to fit in. From a mum that thinks this puzzle piece can kindly fuck off. So that was the first installment of me talking about hating autism. I knew that some people might get triggered by that post when I did that post, but I didn't anticipate it would blow up the way that it did. Like, that blew up. It was over every media outlet in every corner of the world. And yes, I received praise, but there was so much hate that streamed in. I was sent death threats. I was sent threats against my children. I had someone draw artwork of me being crucified on an autism puzzle piece, you know, the puzzle piece that I just fucking said is bullshit. So much. It went so deep. It went so hard. It was crazy. But it actually just continued to fuel me, and it emphasized my point that exactly as carers, we're not allowed to talk about this. We're not allowed to say how hard our days are. We're not allowed to say how exhausting it is. And I call fucking bullshit on that. It's exhausting. It's exhausting being a fucking parent, but it is exhausting dealing with children with additional needs, whatever those needs are. You've got the additional stress of going to therapies, putting together reports for the NDIS, going to those planning meetings, beg, borrow, stealing, pleading for your fucking life to explain that you need the level of support that the therapists are fucking recommending. It's not as if you're going in asking for a fucking 12-night holiday once a fucking year. We're going in asking for the bare minimum and coming out with that stripped in half as well, especially when it comes to high-functioning autism and people going, well, they're fine, you know. And I have this argument and this debate with the NDIS regularly, individually as well. If it was just me on my own with just Hendrix, then sure, we probably wouldn't need as much. If it was me on my own with just Munro, probably wouldn't need as much. If it was me on my own with just Morrison, well, I don't know, that kid, we'd probably need triple it anyway. He is full on. But it's, you know, people aren't, they're not looking at the whole picture. And especially if you've got one child with autism, it's very common that more than one of your children will be on the spectrum. There is a genetic link. There is a genetic link. So they need to be looking as a family whole and offering support for the whole family. But, you know, there is less and less support out there now. And the NDIS came to town with his painted thing that it was going to be incredible and it's going to save everyone's life. And, oh, you're going to get all the support you ever need. And they stripped back all of the other supports that were there. And now, you know, you can barely get anything through the NDIS, but there's no other supports there. There used to be a, I forget what it was called now, Commonwealth Carers Link, I think it was. And you used to be able to ring up and you might need some emergency respite, right? If you're in hospital or one of your other children are in hospital. And then, though, there was still a cap back at that. We used to argue, you know, when Munro was in hospital all the time and we needed respite, you know, they were like, you're accessing it too frequently. It's not considered an emergency. And I'm like, well, but that's what do you want me to do? There's no other funding available. And when she goes to hospital, it's through emergency. Like, we can't plan it, but whatever. So that used to be in place and now that's gone. And now the, or maybe it's called Commonwealth Link, whatever it's fucking called now, Carers in Christ, no, Carers Link. I don't know. Anyway, it's called one of those. I don't bother with it because anytime I rang up, like when I was having my surgery, they had said, oh, well, we really more cater respite for the elderly. Like there's no support if you've got children with additional needs, which is just ridiculous. But anyway, yeah, it's just exhausting. And I wanted to touch on that when I did that post because autism can be fucked. And, you know, knowing what I know about autism now and reflecting, like, I don't have the money to go and get myself assessed. Eventually, I would really like to, but I believe I probably am on the spectrum myself. And I have no doubts that my dad was on the spectrum now that I've dove in and learned so much about autism. So, I mean, and my kids have different fathers. So obviously, you know, the genetic link comes from me. So I think, you know, I don't mean to offend people when I say these things, but I don't know why people can't step back and understand and appreciate from a parent's perspective that that's exhausting for them. You know, you should be allowed to say it's exhausting when I'm getting hit and I'm getting swung at and I'm getting fucking yelled at and, you know, I've got to drive the one particular way every single day or I have to fucking make sure I'm cutting every tag off every bit of clothing or, you know, I go and buy this shirt that I think my child will love and then they put it on and they can't wear it because, you know, the feeling feels funny and you've already cut the tags off so you can't go and get your money back. Like there's so many things and it is so exhausting. And to have several children on the spectrum, it can be really overwhelming. Like, and I know, like, I actually didn't think I would cry at all talking about it. And I guess I'm just tired. Like, today I'm tired. I'm really drained. It's been a really hard couple of weeks with Morrison, and the last week in particular has been really difficult. And it's like, I thought I had a handle on autism. I thought I understood autism, you know, I thought I had a pretty good handle on things, having the older two, and, you know, they're doing pretty well now. They obviously still need therapy with things, but I thought I had a handle on it, and then I had Morrison, and it's like, it almost feels like he gets more autistic. Like, I don't understand it. And I've just, we've been waiting to get into psychologists. There's limited capacity where we are and huge wait lists. And I rang the psychologist that we'd been to that had done all their diagnosis and stuff. We were unable to see them because they wouldn't allow people to come in that weren't unvaccinated. So we lost our psychologist in all amongst of that COVID, you know, nonsense. So that was a bit of a low blow. And I just rang them yesterday exhausted. And I said, are you guys seeing people that aren't vaccinated yet? Because I don't know what else to do. Like, I'm starting to think that often with autism, you know, there's other things that come along, you know, ADHD, and Morrison's also got ADHD, but I think he might have, I think it's ODD, oppositional defiance disorder. I don't know, he might not. I just don't know what he has. It's hard, man. And he is so headstrong. Like, there's no bribing, there's no distracting, there's no whatever. And it's getting to the point now, you know, where I've realized I can't. It's been building up where I knew I can't take him to the supermarket anymore. I can't take him to do those things because he just gets so overstimulated and so overwhelmed, and it's a fucking nightmare each time. And being a single mom, it's really hard. It's really hard because it's not like I, you know, get days to myself every fucking whatever. Like, it's really hard to try and get everything done and be aware that you can't take your child into a store now. But we went out for brunch to celebrate after their dance concert, and he can't keep still, you know. And at home, that's okay, but out and about, it's not, you know. It's not when other people are dining out and, you know, they're frustrated. And, you know, that shouldn't be a reason that people can't go out, because we have a right to be out as well. But, you know, he's climbing over things. It's becoming dangerous. You know, he's accidentally tripping people over and things like that. So it's like, it's exhausting, it's frustrating. That's something we like to do, me and the older kids, like to be able to go out for lunch or breakfast. And now, you know, I have to acknowledge that I can't do that with Morrison right now. And I just don't know what I'm doing with him. And I'm often asked, you know, how do you do it, how, give me some advice on autism. And man, when I can figure him out, I'll happily share it all. But I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know what I'm doing when it comes to that kid. So another common question that I'm asked about people like with autism is, what are some warning signs? Like, how did you pick it up? And obviously Morrison, he was already in therapy. Morrison's got mild cerebral palsy. So he was already going through therapy. And by him, I understood some of the warning signs and stuff, but I wasn't sure how much of it was CP and how much would be autism when I'm talking like sensory things. And then I kind of didn't want to acknowledge it because I didn't want to be having three on the spectrum, but it got to a point where the therapists were like, you know, I don't think that's his CP. I think you should really have him assessed. But with Hendrix, he had some really big moods. So, as a baby, he never made eye contact. He rarely made eye contact with you at all. That was, you know, the first thing, you know, this young baby that wouldn't make eye contact with you. But at the time when he was a baby, I hadn't realized yet. And, you know, again, this is another controversial thing to say, but look, I really believe that my children were born with autism. Like, again, I believe there's a genetic link, but I firmly believe that there's something in vaccines, not for everybody, but for some people, and it can, you know, trigger off and amplify reactions and, you know, make things worse when it comes to autism. So I saw a regression in Hendrix at 12 months and at 18 months. And, you know, by just after, when he was one and a bit, he was counting to 20. And then that all regressed after his shots. So these were sort of, again, I didn't even tie that in to his shots. I just was sort of like, wait, what? He used to be able to do this and that. And it was only through years and years of research that I've been able to, you know, go back and draw a line for that for myself. But that's a, you know, a conversation for another day. But so he, you know, lack of eye contact, he started regressing. He was losing his words. He lost the ability to count to 20 from a young age. But he was still also always very, very smart, like very, very smart, smarter than his peers. And you know, at the time, again, I was just like, oh, I've just got a smart baby. I don't know how I fucking pulled that one. And he was doing things early, but he was also doing things like lining his toys up and color coordinating his trucks and stuff very early on. So if he would play with his Hot Wheels and stuff, he wouldn't necessarily drive them around. He would just line them all up, these big long lines of cars, and you know, they would stream all through the house. And he started to get very triggered when he was younger if we went a different way. So say I was taking him to preschool. If I happened to go a different street, like where we lived, there was often, well, not often, but frequently a section of the road that they would have to do a detour if there'd been heavy rain or something like that. You would have to detour to this other road. So we would, you know, go that way and detour, and he would go ballistic. He would just freak out. There was not calming him down for like sometimes hours. And I'd always be like, it's fine. Like, we're here, we're at the same spot. But he, because we went that different direction, that's not the way we go, he would get really freaked out. He hated loud noises from a young baby. So I couldn't vacuum while he was around or awake. I couldn't put the blender on. He would freak out. He would put his hands over his ears and scream and freak out. A lot of smells would trigger him off. We couldn't go to the shops again. He would have big meltdowns in the shops. And back at the start of it, I didn't know what that was. I was just like, well, fucking what the hell? Like, he's carrying on having a tantrum. And, so different things like that, sensory things. He didn't like, as a baby, he did not want to be finger painting or getting his hands in anything wet or sloppy. And I think by the time we, like, as I started looking up, you know, because he'd have really violent outbursts from a young toddler. Like, he, one time when I was pregnant with Munro, one of the nurses, you know, you go for your little review and your measurements and all of that. And I'd gone in, and she'd actually called a social worker because I was so bruised and scratched. She thought that I was being abused by Munro's dad. And I had to explain that, no, it was Hendrix. He was having these really vicious meltdowns. Like, he would just bite, and he would, you know, lock jaw like one of those dogs. I don't know what breed of dog it is, but he would bite down and he would just lock down. You couldn't pry his mouth open. Like, he'd draw blood and he would scratch and scream, and it was really full on. His sleeping was horrendous as well. And it was a really brutal time. And then by the time Munro was born, it was really exhausting. So he'd started to go, I forget how young Munro was, but he was having his assessments by then because his behaviours had increased, and I was concerned with how his behaviours were around Munro. One of the times he'd had this big meltdown, I think, I can't even remember what it was. It was something to do with Fireman Sam. That was one of his little things he'd get obsessed with, and maybe the show ended or something like that, or it wasn't on. And he'd had this huge meltdown, and I was breastfeeding Munro on the lounge, and he just took off. He just ran out the front door, and I was like, fuck, I had to like chase after him. I had my dress half down because I was breastfeeding Munro, and so my fucking tit is exposed. It's fucking flopping everywhere while I'm legging it with a newborn in my arms to try and catch up to this toddler and pick him up in the midst of his meltdown. But I, like, there was nowhere safe for me to put Munro down. I couldn't just leave her or put her down. There was no one else to take her. And as I've grabbed him to try and scoop him up under my other arm, he's turned around and done his bite. Like, he would just open his mouth and bite whatever he bit, like whatever he could reach. And he'd got Munro's foot, her little baby foot, and he'd latched down, and he nearly took a toe off. Like, it was really bad. And thankfully I was able to pry his mouth off and drag him back into the home and her. And oh, anyway, that was full on. So that like really kicked in the part where he really needed an assessment for whatever was going on. And we'd gone to, what was it called? God, I can't even think. There's like this program that you can go to where they do assessments. And they're supposed to do the assessments without the parents in the room. And I've read a lot about it. And so I went to this place, but he wouldn't get off me. He wouldn't let me leave the room. So they did these assessments. And so during these assessments, he literally just sat on my lap. He wouldn't really do what they wanted to do. He was just like, oh, mum's here. I'm just hugging into mum. I don't know who these people are. And so then they were like, oh, well, there's nothing wrong with him. And I said, what do you mean? Like, you haven't even done all of these assessments properly. Like, I should be out of the room so you can see how he does this and how he does that. And like, I was just so exhausted. And they were like, it's just his behavior. You need to work on it. And I'm like, well, tell me where, like how. I'm so burnt out. Munro was so sick all the time with her skin, going in and out of hospital. Like, I was just at a loss. And I come back and I spoke with my pediatrician and he was just shocked. He's like, what do you mean? And I said, there's nothing. And he's like, okay, you need to take him to see an OT. And then we'll go from there. So we went to an OT and she started doing assessments and we went over a few periods of time. She said, yeah, look, Sarah, I obviously can't diagnose, but I firmly do believe that he's on the spectrum. So then we had to involve a speech pathologist who did a report who also agreed he was on the spectrum. Then we went to a psychologist, a clinical psychologist, who did a full day's of assessments and come up with the same conclusion. And so that's a multidisciplinary team assessment. Then we went back to the pediatrician and he said, yeah, well, that is everything. I agree with it. So now I can sign off on it. So there he got his formal diagnosis and we were able then to start regular therapy. And that was, this is back in the day before the NDIS come into town. There was, what was it called? Fax your funding. Something, anyway, it was a different, $12,000, I think it was $6,000 per year to use for funding. And that was all to go on therapy or equipment that they needed. So we linked him with this incredible OT and she did wonders for his behavior and recommendations and suggestions. And, you know, as he was growing, I obviously had Munro with me going to his therapy sessions. And I started to notice behaviors in Munro. Now, autism can look very different in girls to boys. And often autism is missed in girls. It's not as recognized. ADHD, it's not as recognized because it can look completely different. But the OT over time had started, she said, oh, look, Sarah, I don't want to be rude, but have you thought about getting Munro assessed for autism? And I was like, what? And I was like, no, she's just, you know, quirky little behaviors or whatever. She also had like loud noises, sensory stuff going on. But then I put it down to, you know, it could be to do with her skin. Like, you know, of course she's going to be sensory. Of course she's going to be irritated. She's itchy and in pain all the time, you know. But as time went on, she said, look, I really think you should get her assessed. And so we got her assessed, again, multidisciplinary team, saw speech therapists, saw OT, saw a psychologist a few times. And then, yeah, she was formally diagnosed with autism herself. And I, at the time, I was like, no, I didn't want to have two on the spectrum. Lucky me, got three. but, you know, we are surviving it and I'm very glad. I know a lot of people are like, I don't like the labels. I don't want to get my child assessed. But it really, really helped us. It helped me have an understanding of what I was dealing with. It helped me explain to others. Although, you know, I think one of the biggest battles with having children with autism is getting other people to understand. Because it's so many people are just like, oh, they just need a good smack or they just need this. Like, it's not that simple. It really isn't. But it's been helpful in getting other people around me to understand. And to start with, you know, my own family were like, well, that's not autism. What are you talking about? They just need, you know, a good whack or whatever. But over time, as they've grown and read more about autism and spent more time with my children, they're like, oh, yeah, okay. it's definitely there. Okay, I get it now. So it's been helpful in helping with that as well and coming up with strategies and trying to understand. But when I've had Morrison, it has been, it's as if it's a first diagnosis for me. It really is. It's confusing and overwhelming and I don't know what I'm doing. He is high functioning in, you know, his speech is fine. His understanding is fine, but he just has very, very big moods. And he also has ADHD. So he is nonstop all the time. It's probably going to get super noisy here. So I apologize. You can probably hear the train in the background. But yeah, his behaviors are just very, very different and very hard to handle. And it's hard when you've got several children on the spectrum because they often trigger each other off. You know, one, they all hate loud noises and Morrison's the loudest human I've ever met. Like he's just loud and nonstop. So he's often triggering off Hendrix who needs his own space and he needs to, you know, self-regulate himself, calming down, stepping away. And they're often triggering each other. And that's, you know, one of my biggest struggles at the moment is trying to not let them trigger each other off, and then me getting triggered and irritated because, you know, I know to sort of ignore Morrison or, you know, tune out to some of it, whereas Munro and Hendricks can't tune out to him. And then it's just World War III, because them being triggered then triggers Morrison off more. Like, it can be really, really full on and brutal. But I know, and I've touched briefly on it in some of my blogs, that gut health, there's a huge link with autism and gut health. And when I've really cracked down on Hendricks and Munro's diets, I just have seen such a huge improvement in their behaviours. The hard thing is, you know, that getting the diet changes with people with autism. So Morrison has a very, very poor diet. And I know, I know if I could change his diet, I know we would have improvements. But when you've got somebody that headstrong that won't change, it's really hard to get them open to change or to work on their diet when they won't eat anything remotely healthy. Like, there is not a fruit that Morrison will eat at all. And up until recently, if you've been watching my lives, Morrison has started eating pasta bake. And that was a huge win for us. Usually he would eat pasta, but it would be plain pasta. And recently he asked, oh, can I try some of that pasta? And I was like, sure. And then he was willing to have it. He wanted it every night. So we went through a stage where we had pasta for like a week and a half straight, pasta bake and salad, because he was so open to trying it. So I wanted to roll with that. But I think, and I was talking on live about this, I really think one of the things, consistency is key, right? It's like consistently having that food there in the background, and maybe they'll get interested. And, you know, I never serve it. A lot of people are like, serve it on their plate, serve it with other things. But that, mate, that would just trigger him off. But what I started to do, because I haven't gone back to admin work this term, is I had the capacity to sit down and serve. I've been just leaving the pasta bake in the pasta tray, like in the baking tray, adding a salad next to it, a big bowl of salad, and putting everyone's plates out. Everyone just helps themselves. And so I've been doing that more and more. And it was in, you know, in doing that sort of sitting that Morrison had been open to it. So I really believe that that has helped in some capacity, and we'll keep doing that. I mean, maybe it's just a coincidence, but I really do feel that there is a connection. So if that's something that you struggle with, that would be my first tip to people, which it sounds so simple, but it can get hard. Like, as parents, it's overwhelming. Come dinner time, we're often just fucking chucking a plate on the table, being like, God, there's your dinner, eat quick, it's bath time, and we got to get into bed, and we got to do this, and we got to do that. And especially when so many of us have children that do after school activities, like, it can get full on at that hour. But I would really say give it a go for a week, 2 weeks, just serve it all up, let the kids serve themselves, like put the dishes on the table, let them serve themselves, and see what changes from that. That's been helpful for us, and we'll keep sticking with it, and hopefully he'll start to eat a little bit more and I can work on his gut health. But in the meantime, I don't know. I'll go back to the psychologist. I'll have to wait. They still haven't rang me yet with an appointment. And I would love to hear what their suggestions are. And I guess he'll have to be assessed for other things. I really don't want to medicate him, but I don't know. Maybe we'll get to a point where we'll have to. Like, I never say never. Ideally, I'd prefer, before I ever got to the road of medication, I'd really like to try out all of the natural things that I do know work. But it's getting him to that point of being open to do it, which is really fucking hard. But my phone is ringing at the moment, so what I might do is take a pause here, and then I will, after this phone call, I will record my interview with Michael, and then chuck that in, and then I'll finish off. So in a moment, you are going to hear an interview with Michael Sims. He is the father, an incredible father, devoted father. His child has autism, so I don't want to say too much. I'll let him share his story, and we'll go from there. Okay, guys, welcome back. Now, I'd like to say that this was the first time I was interviewing Michael, but we had a few technical difficulties, so we were halfway through the interview. We're doing it again, so excuse me if some of it sounds rushed through, because we already know the bloody answers, Michael. He's fine. So anyway, guys, I have Michael Sims with me. Some of you may know him from MMAMV. We're not here to discuss or enter a debate about vaccines or anything like that. He's just an incredible man who happens to have a child on the spectrum. So that's why I wanted to speak with you. So welcome, Michael.
Hi again. It's really good to be back so soon.
Welcome back. Who knew you'd be back? That's how popular you were. I just had to have you back straight away. So, yes, today we were talking about you. You've got a son, Jordan, and he is on the spectrum. How old is Jordan?
Jordan's 13.
Okay. And at what age was Jordan diagnosed with autism?
Yeah, it feels weird doing it a second time, doesn't it?
It does.
Because no one else heard it, just us. So I can't even say, like I said before. No. I noticed Jordan was showing signs of autism at 1 year old, and he was diagnosed at 3.5-ish.
Yeah. And so when he was diagnosed, how was he diagnosed? Talk parents through that might be going through that process.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. So let's say I've noticed the changes in him, and we've gone to the doctor and we tried to tell the doctor, and the first doctor has said he's probably deaf, because at that point he'd stopped answering to his name, turning when you called him, etc. But the doctor's like, he's deaf. I'm like, he's not deaf. He watches the Wiggles for crying out loud. But that's it. Then they kind of pushed us out of the surgery. Yep. Went to another doctor, and he said he's probably got ADHD, and again, just pushed us out of the surgery. Third doctor said he's probably deaf again, but he can't have a hearing test until he's 2. So again, we knew he wasn't deaf. So at 2 years old, then he can get his hearing test done, which he passed. Then we had to see a pediatrician, I think that's what it was called, but that took time to book into. Then you finally get into one of them and they go, oh, he could be, but they wanted to have a panel. I don't know if they still do that, but he didn't want it to just be on his name.
Yep.
So yeah, they needed a few people. So my son's like, 2.5 at this stage. So then what happened was, because many parents don't know until their kids go to school and the teachers say it, those kids all got pushed in front of Jordan.
Yeah.
Because they needed it for schooling, et cetera. So, yeah, then it wasn't until about 3.5 that the pediatrician actually said, don't worry about your panel. Because at 3.5 now he's still not talking or anything like that. So then it became more clearer, I guess.
Yeah.
To an expert.
Yeah.
Yes. So then he got diagnosed as autistic.
And so now being 13... and so again, I hate to use those labels, high functioning, low functioning, but it's very apparent that Jordan is on the opposite end of the spectrum as to my children, and is nonverbal and has a lot more challenges. What does a day look like for Jordan at the age of 13 living with autism like this?
Yeah, it's a tough question.
I'm just trying to give parents, because I know a lot of people often think of autism and they think of the good doctor. They glamorized autism. And I think it's important that people understand that there are more than, you know, people with photographic memories in this world.
So Jordan is probably like any other 13-year-old kid in the fact that from the minute he wakes up to the minute he goes to bed, he wants to play with an iPhone or an iPad. I think that's normal, isn't it?
Yeah.
But, okay, so he still loves kids' little parks and play centres and those things.
Yep.
He still hasn't got over many of the things he loved as a 2-year-old. So he still loves the Wiggles, still loves Peppa Pig and all those kind of things.
Yep.
When we go out in public, 95% of the time I'm still holding his hand.
Yep.
So compared to what do they call it? Neurotypical child. You're not holding your 13-year-old kid's hands in the shops.
Yeah.
Can run away in the blink of an eye, can just run because he wants to go somewhere.
Yeah.
And the problem with that is he can't talk.
Yep.
So if he is to get lost, he can't even go up to someone and say, I've lost my dad.
Yep.
Can you give him a shout out? Cool. So none of that's happening. has behaviours in public a lot, loves the football. I live in Canberra and the football's on in the winter. Some of the nights it's -2 degrees and he will refuse to put on a jacket or pants. For sensory reasons, doesn't like them anyway, but also because the footy players, they're not wearing them. He wants to wear the jersey that matches what they're wearing. So again, when he was littler, like 3 and 4, we could struggle with that and get the jumpers on him and put his jerseys over the top.
Yeah.
But as he's become bigger and stronger, there's often no chance.
Yeah.
Yeah. You understand that too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's things like that. He can't do what he really loves.
Yeah.
A good friend said to me once, when I used to post about Jordan all the time, they were like, why do you make it look so glamorous? Like I was doing the same.
Yep.
I would post one photo,
which
was 1 second in time.
Yeah.
He could have had the biggest meltdown then right after that. And me struggled with him on the ground for an hour, kicking and screaming. But I showed the 1 second of the biggest smile on his face. So the shopping malls, like I said before, the music, the background music, there's always background music. If that changes, that upsets him.
Yeah.
If like a techno song comes on, one with a big bass, that affects him and he'll do the runner and scream.
Hey, I'm with him on that one.
Again, still loves kids' play centre, so would rather be there.
Yeah.
And now he's 13, not 2.
Yeah. So do you feel that comes with a lot of judgment if you're trying to take him to an activity he enjoys because there's so limited activities he enjoys? Does that come with issues going into a play center having a child that age and size?
Oh, it does. So yeah, a lot I don't anymore.
Yeah.
And a lot of that came through with the COVID stuff. But when everything was shut, it affected him. Like even though we were breaking the rules, you could say, and we were going to parks, like open parks outside and stuff that were closed. All the indoor stuff that he used to do was actually closed for a year and a half. So then he's not used to doing it anymore.
Yeah.
And then the behaviors like escalated a lot from there. But yeah, even a problem I've had in Canberra, I don't know if you have them. We have a park called Boundless Park, which was funded for people with a disability.
Oh, wow. No, we don't have that here.
But he would still get in trouble there because all parents take all their kids there.
Yeah, right.
So like, even though it was funded for disability, there's no disability kids there. They're all neurotypical kids.
Yeah.
And again, Jordan being bigger, Jordan can't speak. I have to walk around the park with him the whole time.
Yeah.
Within a meter away because if something happens, he can't talk. Yeah. Other kids blame him. Because he's the different kid.
Yeah.
You know, he ran into us or he did this or he, yeah, so.
Yeah.
And he can't go, no, I didn't.
Yeah,
it's hard.
So it comes with a lot of challenges, yeah. So, and if it's too personal, we don't have to go into that, but things like hygiene and toileting, is Jordan able to do those things?
Toileting, yes.
Yeah.
Again, I worked with many that can't.
Yep.
Shower, I won't leave him in the shower by himself. Yep. Like I don't get in the shower with him anymore.
Yeah.
He's in the shower by himself, but I don't leave the bathroom.
Yeah.
He loves to do cooking shows in the shower. So he'll find any kind of hair wash, soap, anything, and mix it in a cup and with a spoon and sip it and taste test it and all that kind of stuff. He will block the drains to try and flood the bathroom. That's the sink, the bath, and the shower.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. So it's quite full on. So it's safe to say that when you have a day with Jordan, you really need to be with him all the time.
Yeah, it's 24/7, and you notice that too as your child gets older. When you go to places and every other parent sipping a latte or something or reading a book. And, like, you're the only parent there actually watching the kids.
Yeah.
But then still when stuff goes wrong, they try to blame your kid.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard. It's difficult. Yeah. I don't think we touched on this recording. I think we just did the last one. with schooling, Jordan attends school or doesn't attend school?
I don't know what I can say legally. Doesn't attend a lot of school.
Yeah. So it's schooling your system is something you've tried, but it's really difficult for Jordan.
Yeah, yeah. I came up in because I work in disability.
Yep.
And you said earlier where, mate, I don't know, Mason, your youngest boy.
Morrison.
Yep. Morrison, where he goes. Because I worked in a disability day centre, which was from 18 years to 50 years, that finished school and had nowhere else to go.
Yep.
So we're never going to get a job. Had nothing else to go. Some people say the worst of the worst.
Yeah.
Because they had nowhere else to go. I kind of didn't want my son to be stuck in a school room with those kind of people.
Yeah.
And not to be mean to them. They've all got a disability.
Yeah.
But I'm talking biters, punchers, sexual abusers. Yeah, so I tried to keep him in the mainstream system.
Yeah.
But still, that obviously that doesn't work. They get bullied. They get picked on.
Yeah.
They're the different kid. No one wants him in the class.
Yeah.
So, yeah, school is just weird, hard. And the kids don't want to go to school because they can feel it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we've tried.
It's a difficult thing. Yeah, it is. It's a difficult thing to navigate. And I think, you know, parents that don't have children with additional needs get to live in that luxury of, you know, we just send our kids to school and we deal with the typical of maybe there's a bit of bullying, maybe there's whatever. But when you've got a child with additional needs, you've got to be concerned about how they're actually getting treated, not just regular bullying, but there's excessive bullying, not just by students, but, you know, irritated teachers that know that they can take it out on these children that don't have a voice. And, you know, it's just, there's so many factors that come into it, and it is an overwhelming system. Like, it's very broken, and there's no easy solution. There's no right solution, because how do you exactly, I don't want, and it's not to be mean to anybody that has a severe disability, but I wouldn't want my children only with those children or adults that have, you know, a lot more difficulties and can be a lot more violent. But then I also don't want my children to be the kid that's disrupting as well. So it's like, where do you, we just, well, that's why we're in homeschool now, because I don't know the middle ground. Like, that's our middle ground. We're just going to homeschool and do our own thing.
Well, my issue there is, I guess I can say it on this podcast, yeah. NDIS is raw, right?
Yeah.
Again, like, I'm working with adults that some of them are getting $350,000 a year, which seems like a lot of money. I think it is, because I was only getting, you know, $60,000 to work with them.
Yeah.
So someone else is getting the rest of the money. Mm-hmm. But my point is that money probably was better spent on these kids while they're at school.
Yeah.
Like, why can't they get one-on-one assistance at school? Why wait until they leave school and then give them one-on-one assistance?
Yeah. Well, I touched on briefly in my other recording, I hate the NDIS. I think it's one of the worst things that has ever come into play. And, you know, they're often, when you've got a child on the spectrum, it's often, oh, that's parental responsibility. We don't need to do that. It's parental responsibility. And they lack a lot of funding during the early years, but then potentially give it to them when there's an adult. And I'm a big believer in early therapies and early intervention. And I've seen the benefits of that happening from Hendricks and Munro.
Yeah.
And now, you know, we're fighting tooth and nail to get appropriate funding for Morrison, who is the hardest of them all. And it's very, very difficult. And I can see him getting worse. And if he doesn't have that, you know, intense assistance like the older two did, he's going to have a lot of problems in life. And that's, you know, nobody wants that when it's avoidable. Obviously, there are some things that are out of our control with him and his behaviours, but a lot of it we can try and help him. Now, with Jordan and your life and his end of the spectrum, is living on his own ever going to be something that's possible?
No.
And so he'll always need care.
Yeah. And that's what I say. I think, I don't know if you're touching on that now, but when we ran out before, when it cut off, you were talking about your post about hating autism.
Yeah. So I tried to ask you, when you see a parent, when you see a carer that makes a blanket statement of, I hate autism, how does that make you feel?
Yeah. So I think when you did that post, I was with you.
Yeah.
I was, we were tag teaming some people. So again, I can answer both questions at the one time.
Yeah.
What was the first question?
Oh, God, don't. Today I'm all over the shop. I was on the phone before and I'm like, I don't even know what I'm talking about right now. What was the first question? Living independently.
George. Okay, yeah. Okay. So when you have a child, this is every parent in the world, we have dreams for our child.
Yeah.
And they're the most non-achievable dreams for 99% of us. You know, I want my kid to play for Australia. I want him to go to the Olympics. I want him to be a doctor. I want him to marry a princess. All that kind of shit, right?
Yeah.
When you have a disabled child or one highly autistic,
yep,
all those dreams become null and void.
Yeah.
I say my son will never live independently. He will never have a girlfriend.
Yeah.
So not only will he not marry a princess, he will not ever have a girlfriend. He will never bring anybody home.
Yeah.
Boy or girl.
Yeah.
He will most likely never have any kind of job.
Yeah.
He will never drive a car. Like I say, I have to watch him in the bathroom. He will never go outside alone.
Yeah.
So that's massive. And like you have to acknowledge that. That might sound like I'm being mean to him or bad. I'm not. I love him.
Yeah.
I couldn't love him any more than I love him. Yeah. That's just acknowledging that he cannot live the life that he should have been able to live.
Yeah.
Therefore, like you said, I hate autism.
Yeah.
I don't hate my son. I don't hate people with autism.
Yep.
But autism has taken his life. Is it a gift? He can do some amazing things that maybe he couldn't have done if he didn't have autism, sure.
Yeah.
But he will never do the list that I just told you.
Yeah.
And then I say, well, what about him? Does he want to be 30 years old and still wanting to watch Peppa Pig?
Yeah.
Probably not.
Yeah.
Does he want to go and have friends? Oh, I'm sure he does because he sees other kids play and he wants to play with them.
Yeah.
Does he want to talk? Hell yeah, he wants to talk. He tries to talk every single day.
Yeah.
You know what? He has to pull out an iPad and sit and type it. Like, imagine if we all had to do that instead of talking.
Yeah.
And it's frustrating as hell.
Yeah.
I think, again, with the broad spectrum, I don't think we mentioned that in this one. From the, like I said, the 40-year-old that wears helmets because he headbutts the wall all day and still wears nappies, all the way to the good doctor is now called autism.
Yeah.
To me, it's like if you got cancer or diabetes or the flu and we just all call it sick.
Yeah.
We don't have all those other words. We just call it sick.
Yeah.
It's too big of a spectrum. And I think you and I have a few times get highly attacked by these people with families that have a job and live in a house and they go, I'm autistic and I love it. Shut the fuck up.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's the, and it's hard because, you know, when I set out and I did that post, like I never sit down with anything I say with the intent to offend anybody, but there's always going to be somebody that gets offended about something. But it seems to be this really growing thing. Now, we know there's a growing epidemic of people being diagnosed with autism, but there seems to be a huge growth spurt of people that are considered the high functioning, looking like the good doctor, have a few quirks, maybe a few sensory issues, are very intelligent, and then all of a sudden it's like they're claiming, well, this is autism. This is what it is. But people are forgetting, no, autism can be nonverbal. It can be non-toileting. It can be meltdowns nonstop. It can be like, it is hard. And there's also this big pool of people that refuse to acknowledge that parents can find that exhausting. We're not allowed to call ourselves autism parents because we don't have autism. I call bullshit on that. Like, it's any parent, whether they've got a child with additional needs or not, should be able to go, fuck, today was a hard day. My kids are fucked. You know, like, we all have those days. But when you're waking up and you're being hit and kicked and spat on and you didn't cut the tag off a shirt and the music's too loud and you tried it, you fucking forgot your bread, so you got to duck into Woolies and it ends up in World War III, like, that's hard. And when you're living with that all the fucking time, you're allowed to say this is fucking hard. Like, it is hard. And there's no parent that can honestly listen and say, oh, yeah, I truly wouldn't care if, you know, my child was impacted in some way. Like,
It's only autism. I think that you're not allowed to say it with for yes. some reason, because if your kid is blind and you go, I wish my kid could see.
Yeah.
Of course you wish you could see. If they're in a wheelchair, I wish my kid could walk. And so does he.
Yeah. Like, yeah, we're allowed to say that. Like, I'm allowed to say I hate eczema. It doesn't mean I hate people with eczema. Yep. I'm allowed to say I hate cerebral palsy on Morrison, but it doesn't mean that I hate him. So how come I'm allowed to say I hate his cerebral palsy that caused him to choke nonstop, but I'm not allowed to say I hate his fucking autism because fuck, this week's been hard, and it has. Like, he pulled a knife on his brother. Like, it's fucking, it's brutal, man. I'm barely hanging on. Like, and then we're told all the time by NDIS and all these services in place to help, parental responsibility, you'll be right. Like, really, mate, I'm not okay over here. We need help.
One of the simplest things I asked NDIS for was just for a worker to, like, my son played footy for 3 years.
Yep.
Under eights for 3 years. So under eights until he was 11. Do you know what I mean? And the club let him do that, which was great. But I was on the field with him the whole time.
Yeah.
I had to run and chase him. I want to sit and watch my son like every other parent is doing.
Yeah.
Why do I have to run on the field and chase and, do you know what I mean? And go to every practice. Like, no other parent was at practice.
Yeah.
But I was.
Yeah.
Yeah, why? And then, yeah, and they said the same. Well, you're the parent. I'm like, well, no other parent's there. Why am I the only parent there?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's really, really hard. And especially when it comes to autism funding is so hard to get through the NDIS. Like, you know, and I know before anyone gets triggered, I know of people that have level 5 cerebral palsy that aren't being funded enough. But it's easier when you have a physically visible disability. They're like, oh, yeah, you can have this. When you've got a disability of the mind, it's suddenly like, oh, no, well, we can't see the problem, so you don't need
it. Yeah, I noticed that, again, more so when I was working in disability care.
Yeah.
That to me, to everybody, the hardest person to work with was 150-kilo 18-year-old that wanted to punch your head 24 hours a day and pull his penis out, right? And no one would work with him, and you couldn't unless you're big like me because he would seriously send you to hospital.
Yeah.
Yet he got less funding than Wendy, the beautiful 25-year-old girl in the wheelchair.
Yeah.
That could talk and loved to go to the coffee shop.
Yeah.
She needed one-on-one assistance to push her wheelchair.
Yeah.
But the guy that's 150 kilos and wants to kill the world, it makes no sense.
I know. I know. It's such a broken system. And I think, you know, it's in those moments that these parents go, oh, I fucking hate this shit.
Yeah.
I do hate this shit. If they were regular and a neurotypical child, we wouldn't be begging and pleading for a little bit of support, and we wouldn't be so fucking exhausted all the time. Like, to those people that think it's a walk in the park, come and live with us for a week. Like, come and spend a week with someone with children with autism, and I guarantee you, you'll walk out saying the same thing. Like,
a day. Like, even with me, when I was working in disability, my only friends were people that I worked with.
Yeah.
And sometimes, often, we would go out with my son together.
Yeah.
You know, let's go to the footy, the three or the four of us will go to the footy. There was some times where it needed the three of us.
Yeah.
And a security guard.
Yeah.
To remove a 10-year-old.
Yeah.
Right? And again, he loves the sports and that's why we took him, but there were times where a security guard and three of us had to escort him out of the place.
Yeah, see, I don't think people really understand as well. Like, these children, it's like they can get superhuman strength. Like, they might be little, but they're fucking strong. When they're having a meltdown, God, they are strong. Like, it is so hard to pin them down or hold them or restrain them or move them. And I don't think people understand the gravity of just that in itself. Like, it's a lot. And then even just the you know, the mental strain of the friendship factor, you know, you would know yourself. Not a lot of people want to be friends with someone that has a kid that has additional needs. No. People will often go, I'd be friends, but it gets overwhelming. They don't,
real quick.
Yeah.
So, like, even with family.
Yeah.
Like, I say the story that I only really seen my family at Christmas.
Yeah.
Once a year, we'd go to Christmas.
Yeah.
And then you look at the photos and all the adults are inside having a lovely dinner. I'm outside, seated at the kids' table.
Yeah.
because I'm with my son.
Yeah.
And then he's off doing his own thing after lunch. So I am following him around again the whole time.
Yeah.
Not in any way socially talking to anyone else.
Yeah.
And I guess over the years I've got used to that. That's why I don't talk anymore.
It's hard, but it's hard. It becomes really, really isolating because you do. You get a bunch of people that are like, oh, just they need a good smack, or, you know, I'll leave them alone. They'll do their own thing. Like, they don't understand it. And then you become a burden to them, or, you know, they just find the whole situation irritating, or yeah. Like, it's a lonely journey to be the parent of a child with autism. It really is.
Yeah.
It really is. But anyway, I might wrap it up because we've already been waffling on. We could keep going for ages, but it's already been half an hour and I'm like trying to, but you know me, I like a good chat and I'm trying to keep the podcast down so it's not too long. but I might eventually touch base with you on this again. I've told parents that I want people, if they've got, because I get a lot of questions about autism and diagnosis support and, you know, tips and like that. So as the questions start to stream in, I'll probably do another podcast where we can, you know, go off the answers and give suggestions on both ends of the spectrum. Yep. Might be nice. And then also on another episode, once I've eased people into how I speak, I might dive into those other controversial topics with you.
Yeah. Because we kind of mentioned that little bit in the first one, but not in the second one.
Yeah.
But that's okay.
Well, we'll just throw it out. I briefly touched on the first recording that I'd done on my own. So Michael had seen a connection between his son and his childhood vaccines and his regressions around. So we all know children get vaccinated at, you know, 12 months, 18 months. And like me, Michael drew a connection. So I think we will go into that on another episode a little bit deeper because a lot of people don't get to hear that side of things. And I think once people wake up and understand that, so many more parents have drawn the connection in that and gone, fuck, I've gone back on that video of him at 12 months and a week later, the day he got his vaccines, there was a change. But in that moment, if we don't know to look for it, we don't know. So, but yeah, anyway, that can be a conversation for another day.
Beautiful.
But thank you very much for giving me your time, Michael. And thanks for like doing it twice with me.
Well, thanks for having me. It was good to chat with you again. It's been a while.
It has been a little bit, hasn't it?
She did the runner on me, guys.
At what?
No, I said she did the runner on me, guys.
I'll fight you, mate. Anyway, I'll finish this one off. I'll tie it off, and then I'll chat to you a little bit later. But thank you, Michael. Thank you so much. And if people want to check you out and follow your story, where can they find you?
MMAMV Australia. MMAMV Australia.
And is that on all
sorts? It's on all of them. It's really, you have to type in the whole thing now, you know, shadow band.
Bit shadow band over there, young man. All right. Well, thank you very much, Michael. It was nice to talk to you.
Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Yeah. Bye. Well, that was the beautiful Michael. And again, you can find him on social media, MMAMV_Australia is Instagram. And I'm assuming Facebook is similar. I will find out. I'll tag the link in the description of this podcast. So I'm really grateful that Michael could jump on and have a chat with us. Again, you know, when I speak about autism, I'm speaking from a point of view of children that are classed as this high functioning. And I think when people go on and get so frustrated by somebody saying they hate autism, they need to understand there's more than just the high functioning. There's a deeper level. And there are people with more severe autism than Michael and his son Jordan. You know, there are, like Michael touched on, there are 40-year-old men still in diapers, unable to communicate and quite violent. Like it's a huge spectrum here. And I don't think anyone should be glamorizing it. And, you know, that's a controversial thing to say, but it is what it is. And like I said, you know, I hate eczema. It doesn't mean I hate people with eczema. I hate cerebral palsy. It doesn't mean I hate people with cerebral palsy. I hate Down syndrome. It doesn't mean I hate people with Down syndrome. You know, my brother died of trisomy 13. He would have been severely disabled had he have survived. And I, you know, I hate his condition. That does not mean that I hate him in any way, shape or form. So yes, I hate autism, but I love my children more than life itself. There's nothing that I wouldn't do for them. And it's just an exhausting thing to have to deal with. And to any parent out there that has a child on the spectrum, like, I send my love to you. And I know, you know, you've got great days, but there are really dark days. And We have a lot of them, and it's hard for me because I go through this motion of like, I want to share more about that and speak more about that. But I'm also, I try to be cautious, you know, when I talk about things like Hendrix and his outburst as a third, as an almost 13 year old, he'll be 13 in on Boxing Day. I try to be respectful that, you know, he now has a friend group, and he, as he gets older, his friends will listen to these things. And everything I've discussed, it's always been things that he's okay with me sharing, but I don't know. I've never asked him. Maybe I'll have to have that conversation as he gets a little bit older and has the capacity to really understand the implications of that, and understand if, is he okay with me talking about the bad days as a teenager, because I don't want to make him uncomfortable. But it's hard because I wish I could share that. I wish I could get on and openly share about those experiences and days and challenges and asking other parents what they do and telling other parents, you know, what we do. But yeah, so for now, I just share little bits and pieces. It's easier to talk about the younger experiences, because people, I think people can respond better to knowing, oh, you know, that child has autism, oh, they're having that outburst, oh, okay. But if you get on and you start talking about a 13-year-old that's, you know, pretty high functioning, and then you talk about a bad day, then they start to have this judgment about that person. And it's just, yeah, I don't want that for Hendrix, but I will try and share more as I can about all of our experiences and the exhaustion that comes with it. And, you know, some people probably think I've really got my shit together, but you see a small portion of social media, you know, and the last 2 weeks have been really bad with Morrison. Like, his moods have been so big, and he's getting stronger, and he's getting harder to handle. And, you know, even he was with his support worker today, and she had a tough time with him. And like, it's just hard. It just seems to be getting harder. But I'm very excited that we can now go back to that psychologist. I'm really hopeful that they can help me come up with some solutions and strategies, and help me build up some bigger reports to take into the NDIS and say, hey, we do need a little bit more support, because I can't do all the things that he needs plus do all the things that the other children need and be in all the places and homeschool. Like, it is just, it's a lot to try and do, and I'm feeling really overwhelmed with it. And I hate the idea of having to go, oh, I need, you know, a support worker to come in 3 times a week to help with Morrison. Like, I'm his mom, I should be able to do it. But I also have to be real. Like, my other children need me, and Morrison is taking so much of me. And I, you know, we only get a short period of time with our children. I want to be there. I want to be actively in their lives. I want to, at nighttime, go and read a book with them and play a ball game with them instead of spending hours trying to get Morrison to sleep, you know. Or, like, it's just, it's a lot. It is a lot. And, yeah, I appreciate you all listening if you've made it this far. I hope this podcast has helped people that might have been a little bit like, what, she hates autism. I hope that this has helped you sort of understand things a little bit better, understand where I'm coming from, understand the exhaustion, understand there's many levels of the spectrum. If you are an autism parent and you know, hate autism as much, and maybe this will help you feel less alone and understand, you know, all of us, not, well, I can't say all of us, but many of us autism parents or parents of children with autism, I fucking hate it. We're right with you. We're just as exhausted. We're all barely hanging on. And, you know, I see you all, and I send so much love to you all. But please, again, I say it every time, keep those questions coming in. I will touch more on autism. I will touch more on everything. But if there are specific things of diagnosis or where to go or, you know, strategies that you might like assistance with, send them all in, because, like I said, I will touch on this again myself, but I also, as my podcast episodes grow, would like to start to get some guest speakers, and I would like to get some people that can, you know, an OT in or a psychologist in that can help give some really sound advice, because obviously I don't have formal qualifications, I've just got lived experience. Although I will always argue, I think lived experience is often more beneficial than a qualification, but I think it's important that we hear from all sides at all times. So again, thank you all for listening. Make sure you hit subscribe so you can get notified when a new episode is out. And I look forward to talking to you all again soon. Have a beautiful day, night, morning, evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. See you guys later.